the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm Chris Prytower. We've all heard sad stories about seniors or elder citizens that end up in financial difficulties. Now, in some cases, they end up being a burden to their children. Other cases, they're wards of the state. There are some common reasons why this may happen, which is why we want to cover them here on the program today. And one issue is a major loss in your investment portfolio that you just never recover from, and it alters your lifestyle, and in the worst case, or the worst instance, it leaves you broke. So the other is a long-term illness or incapacity such as Alzheimer's, and that can create a financial burden that could really drain your finances.
Yeah, the first issue, Chris, I want to cover here is an issue we call sequence risk, which is going through a bear market at the beginning of your retirement. Imagine this, losing 50 to 60% of your assets at the beginning of your retirement, which is what happened in the bear markets of 2000 to 2002, and of course the great financial crisis between 2007 and 2009. Those were major bear markets where people lost a lot of money. And today, many have not fully recovered from those losses, despite the fact the stock market is up over 300% from the recession. Now, the reason I'm discussing it here is we're in another Fed rate-raising cycle. The Fed raised interest rates last month, and they've indicated they're probably going to raise them again come this December. And we're also in an extended economic recovery. If this continues, it'll be the longest on record. Same thing with the bull market. So it is very easy to think when you're in these good times, the unemployment rate is down, people are getting jobs, the economy is growing, corporate profits are growing as well. It's easy to think that the good times will last forever. And of course, they never do. So you want to avoid a major drawdown of your assets at the beginning of your retirement, as it may take a decade or more to regain and recover from those losses. And let me give you an example. If you take a look at where the stock market was, and this is the S&P 500, it was around 1,500 in March of 2000. It hit a new record. And then the stock market went down and fell by over 50%. By the end of 2002, stocks were on the march again, and the stock market got back up to 1,500 in the fall of 2007. But then the stock market lost another 58%, almost 60%. And it would not be until April of 2013 that the stock market once again reached the level it had reached in March of 2000. So Chris, for 13 years, the stock market on a price basis went virtually nowhere.
And you know, Jim, I think it's hard for many investors to think about a bear market when we've got an environment like right now where good times have lasted so long. In fact, it's made history. Most people just feel that when there's nothing but good news regarding the economy and the stock market, that good news can only get better and continue, and we know that's just not the case.
Yeah, there's a predictable pattern that we see followed in the markets. In fact, there's a whole school of thought called financial economics where we talk about investor psychology. And it is repeated, and it can be attributed to much of what we see in bull and bear markets. Most investors, if you take them on as a whole, are risk adverse. They would prefer to avoid losses versus the opportunity of large gains. And Chris, this sequence is followed in bull markets and in bear markets. It flips. In a bull market, it kind of goes like this. Positive events lead to increased optimism. The economy is coming out of recession. Corporate profits are going up. Companies are hiring workers. The unemployment rate is going down. Now, that increased optimism makes people feel more risk tolerant. Hey, if times are good, I might as well take advantage. Maybe I'm going to buy a new home. Maybe I'll invest in the market. And what happens over time is risk tolerance lowers risk premiums. In other words, people aren't demanding to be compensated for risk like they once were when times were bad. Lower risk premiums leads to lower returns on risky assets. A good example is junk bond yields. It's hard to believe 5 or 6 years ago, the yield on junk bonds was double digits. Today, it's not too much above treasuries. Of course, this leads to inflated prices on risk assets. The higher prices creates and makes risk assets even riskier. Investors reduce their margin of safety. Events, of course, then go into reverse. The Fed raises interest rates to a point where the economy goes into a recession. The recession brings on a bear market. Asset prices fall. Instead of optimism, now we are faced with pessimism. Risk premiums rise. Prices become cheap. Just think of real estate. In the years 2008 to years 2012, we were always told the real estate prices would never go down. Well, guess what? They fell nearly 40%. But who would not like to look back in retrospect and buy real estate here in Southern California at prices that were prevailing between 2008 and 2012? So in bad times, people are pessimistic about the future. They don't want to invest. They want to hide, put their money in the bank, be safe, just as in optimistic times, as we're living in today, people are just the reverse. They take greater risks, and they think the good times will last, and we know they don't. And at some point, Chris, you know, our best guess is maybe 2020 or maybe the end of 2019, we will be in another recession.
Well, and Jim, it's interesting because this topic, this idea that people invest emotionally, there are some folks that have made quite a bit of money from exploiting that, something called contrarian investing, where basically people purchase and sell in contrast to the prevailing sentiment of the time. So it's really interesting how people's emotions really do impact the decisions that they make. But Jim, what's the best way for our listeners to avoid putting themselves in a situation where they don't fall prey to letting their emotions alter making a rational investment decision?
You know, Chris, probably the best way is to have a plan that takes into consideration, number one, your lifestyle needs, especially if you're retired, what your risk tolerances are, in a portfolio that is balanced so you're not fully invested in any one asset class. The problem is when things start to go up and look so good, for example, take real estate prices in the last decade, everybody was going to get rich by investing in real estate. Well, now everybody's going to get rich by investing in FANG stocks. So a good example is what is now occurring in the bond market with the rise in interest rates and bond yields. Most bond funds are underwater this year and are likely to remain that way in the years ahead as rates rise in the next bond bear market. And unlike bull and bear markets in stocks, bull and bear markets in bonds can last 3 to 4 decades. I remember, Chris, when I first got in the business in 1980, we had gone through a period of almost 3 decades where interest rates rose every single decade. Now, if you're a bond investor, it means you probably lost money. The last bond bear market began in the late 50s and lasted until the early 80s. So you not only want to be conservatively invested during your early years of retirement, but you also want to make sure you adapt your portfolio to the business cycle and changes in the economy and the investment markets. This idea that you can set and forget is probably the surest way to the poorhouse that I can think of. Just as you have to adapt your estate or your tax plans to changes in the tax laws, the same is for the investment markets as we go from one business cycle to the next.
So these are good, usable ideas for our listeners. You mentioned having a plan, adapting that plan when necessary. What's something else that could potentially send someone to the poorhouse?
Boy, this is something we see so often. The next major event is a serious illness or a prolonged illness like, let's say, dementia or Alzheimer's that could require assisted living in the latter stages of your life. Now, as we have discussed in past programs, the lifetime cost of health care for a retired couple age 65 can amount to well over $250,000 in retirement. In 2017, that cost was $260,000 for the average couple. Now, Fidelity updates that figure every single year, and they just updated it for 2018. The figure has jumped to $280,000 for a couple age 65 over the life of their retirement. And here's something that hits seniors in many ways more so than the average family. Average inflation cost for retirees have been over 6% annually due to rising medical costs. And these numbers, Chris, are just averages since Medicare has now gone to what I call a six-tiered pricing system. What that means is based on your income, you can pay a different monthly premium for your Medicare benefits. It ranges from $134 in the bottom tier. And this year, as a result of a bill passed in January, they just added a sixth tier pricing for Medicare that can be as high as $470 a month per person. So that figure I mentioned, $280,000, is just the bare minimum cost. For upper-income Americans, that figure can be two to three times that amount.
Now, Jim, we have folks from all walks of life that listen to this show, but that really seems like a lot of money for health care. What goes into that figure?
I mean, that figure includes the premiums you pay for Medicare, the premiums you pay for Medigap insurance, because Medicare only covers about 60% of your medical costs, cost-sharing provisions, out-of-pocket expenses on deductibles for both Medicare Parts A, B, and D, and it does not include other expenses such as over-the-counter medications, dental services, long-term care. Medical coverage is getting to be more expensive. I know in our own firm, just in the last year, our medical premiums for our employees went up nearly 20%. Now, the other factor as to why this number keeps going up is people are living longer, which means additional years of coverage. When Social Security was first enacted, I think in 1936, the average life expectancy of a male was somewhere around 65 years of age, or around 68 for a woman. Today, those life expectancies have gone up into the 80s. So if you just think a basic coverage of Medicare premiums for a husband and wife in the Medigap insurance, that could easily run $500 a month or $6,000 a year. Add in cost increases, the tiered pricing, deductibles, service and treatments not covered by Medicare, and you can see how $280,000 out of pocket for Medicare is easily reached.
So as you're going through these larger numbers, Jim, it reminds me of long-term care expenses, and that's something that a lot of times we don't think about until we're in a certain age where we might have health concerns start to crop up. How does one plan for these expenses like long-term care and the regular expenses that you've just mentioned?
Chris, you want to include these costs in your annual budget if you are retired or nearing retirement. Most couples, you know, might add in, let's say, okay, my Medicare premiums are going to be $500 a month for my wife and myself. What they're not thinking is all these other expenses that we just mentioned. So if you're saying, hey, my medical premiums are only going to be $500 a month, you really need to budget $10,000 to $12,000 a year in the annual budget. Even though you may not spend the money, you should be setting that aside in your early years in some form of savings so the money is there when you need it in your later years. Another option we also recommend is, let's say, for example, life insurance with what is called a living long-term care benefit, or annuities that are set aside to handle long-term care, because those figures I just mentioned, $280,000, does not include long-term care. And especially if you have a couple or an individual that has a history of longevity, maybe your parents lived to in their 90s. I have one client right now that has a mother that is over age 100. So part of these expenses are we're living longer and we know medical costs are going up every single year. For most of you that are retired, it's probably averaging 5 or 6% a year.
So, Jim, with a topic like this, whenever something kind of gets under my skin, like the kind of numbers you're bringing up that are just through the roof, I always like to look at studies, do a little bit of research, you know, find out what other conclusions people have come to. But, Jim, in your own experience, and also from some of these studies, how do people avoid some of these disastrous effects from happening where people do end up broke?
You know, before we get to that, I want to mention those are the two main events. One is suffering severe investment losses like a bear market where you could lose 50 to 60% of your assets at the beginning of your retirement. And then a serious medical illness or something like a debilitating disease like dementia or Alzheimer's. But there are two other factors that could lead you to the poorhouse besides medical and investment losses. One is retiring too early and not having enough assets to carry you through retirement and inflation. Remember, if you retire at age 60, that means you may spend 30 to 35 years or longer in retirement. Many individuals put all of their assets in fixed income investments. So another problem they may face is inflation, you know, because what happens when we retire, we want predictable income, we want safety, but you want to make sure that you have some kind of inflation hedge in your portfolio, or, you know, maybe you're fortunate enough to have, I know some of the state pensions here are indexed to inflation, but some of their expenses are going to remain constant, others are going to go up each year. And you have to ask yourself, if you're spending $50,000 a year to live or $60,000 and you're age 65, what is it going to cost you when you're 75 and 85? But as far as planning for the other two factors of losses and medical, these are things that could be planned for in a number of various ways. You can, for example, work longer. So you're not drawing your assets down over a longer period of time, but a shorter period of time. By working longer, you also allow your assets to accumulate, and or another thing that we're seeing that's a very popular option is working part-time and also delaying Social Security to age 70 for larger benefits. Now, as we've discussed with our guest over with Yolanda York last week, an example is the maximum Social Security benefit is $2,788 this year per month. If you delay receiving that benefit, let's say you qualify for maximum benefits, you delay that to age 70, that will grow to $3,680 a month at age 70 because it goes up 8% a year guaranteed by the government. That is an extra $10,706 a year. At today's rate of interest on treasuries, Chris, here's the shocker. That's equivalent to having an additional almost $360,000 of capital. That's what it would take to produce that extra almost $11,000. So you can also do things like, for example, add some blue chip dividend paying stocks to your portfolio, stocks that have a history of increasing their dividend year after year by 7 to 8%. So you have some form of an inflation hedge that is going to enable you to pay for those extra expenses as your cost of living continues to rise. And you want to avoid the major damage that can avoid, let's say, damage a portfolio during a bear market. Because what we saw in the last decade, and certainly what we saw in the late 90s, when the stock market was going up 15% every year, people had 100% of their portfolio in the market because everybody was going to get rich. Or people that bought leverage and bought a lot of homes or real estate in the last decade. The most important thing you can do is have a plan that protects your assets from a major bear market and the loss of capital and provisioning for medical expenses, having a plan for, let's say, long-term illness should it arise, or retiring at an age that allows you not to draw down your capital so you don't outlive your assets. Those are just some practical things. And the good news about all of this, Chris, with a proper plan, you can avoid these issues and you can provide for a safe and secure retirement. It's not like you don't have any options. As I mentioned, two very popular options that we're seeing today. People are working longer That's one option. People are working part-time. That's another option. People are delaying their Social Security, allowing it to grow by 32% to age 70. That's another option. People are moving, downsizing their homes. They're moving to states where the cost of living or taxes are much cheaper. So it's not like you're trapped in this environment. You have plenty of options if you have a good plan.
So in boiling everything down, Jim, there's two things that really rise to the surface. There's two things that tend to put people into financial duress in their later years. One has to do with major investment losses. And of course, it's very difficult to fully recover from those. It reduces your income, obviously. The other is having a major medical illness and medical expenses that were not planned for or budgeted for. But something else that tends to impact seniors especially is having no inflation protection. And I mention seniors especially because seniors generally experience higher inflation rates since healthcare costs tend to rise. Also, retiring too early with not enough assets to draw down during retirement. And I do recommend for our listeners listening to the Lawrence Kotlikoff interview we did on July 17th of 2018. It's titled Kotlikoff, The Rules for Retirement Planning Have Completely Changed. And he really gives some great advice. One key nugget about potentially retiring too early with not enough assets to draw down during retirement. I do recommend that particular podcast for those that would like to further research that topic. It's time for our real-life case study, and of course, this is a hypothetical illustration based on real-life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed to protect privacy, and we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points that are being made here today.
And this case is, we're going to talk about Cindy Ross. She's age 75. She's retired. Her life expectancy is 88, although her mom did live into the 90s. She's a very conservative investor, so her main objective is capital preservation and, of course, income. Cindy has been retired now for about 10 years and lost her spouse about a year ago due to a heart condition. She has immersed herself into her artwork but was having difficulty, so she saw a doctor and was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. She decided to seek help given all the major life events she was going through. And this is not unusual, Chris, to see an individual, you lose a spouse, and then all of a sudden your own health conditions could worsen, or you pick up or you're diagnosed with the disease, as the case with Cindy and Parkinson's. She acknowledges she will most likely need help at some point, but doesn't want to have to rely on her kids and be a burden to them. Rather, she would prefer to maintain her independence for as long as possible. Her kids live in Tennessee and South Carolina, while her and her late husband lived in California for most of their marriage. She'd like to be able to leave some sort of legacy for her children. She was worried about if the disease progresses, that she spends all her assets and there would be nothing left for the kids. So what was important to Cindy? Not having to rely on her kids to care for her, maintaining her independence, leaving some kind of legacy, and managing medical costs, because she does know as the disease progresses, medical costs are going to go up. Her budget was roughly about $68,050, a little over $50,000 for essential budgets. Discretionary, mainly travel, was about $17,000. Her income was $24,000, and basically leaving a shortfall of roughly about $30,000. Her primary residence was valued roughly about $650,000. She had $470,000 in retirement assets, about $600,000 in taxable investments, and cash and precious metals of about $175,000. So her total investment assets were roughly about $1.25 million. Liabilities, which was the remaining balance on the mortgage on her house of $80,000, was very small. Her net worth was roughly about $1.8 million. What we did is we took a look at living closer to her children. And one of the things that that would do is, after moving out of California, selling a house, she could, number one, downsize, free up some capital. Two, go to a place where the cost of living was cheaper and free up some assets. And by doing that, she was able to pay for a house roughly about $400,000 versus the $650,000 house she had in California. So she was able to increase her investment assets, and as a result of that, bring her cost of living down and also be closer to her kids, just in case she did need some assistance later on. But she wanted to basically be self-reliant and then basically have enough income. And by downsizing her home, moving to South Carolina from California, freeing up some capital, getting rid of a mortgage, her investment income increased to $65,000. You add that to Social Security, she ended up having a surplus well over $1,200 a month, or almost $13,000 a year. And so in this case, we were increasing her income, reducing her expenses, which would give her the confidence that she would have enough money to basically live independent and then handle the disease should it progress or worsen. And so once again, as we talked about, by moving closer to her kids, a new home would allow her more independence for a longer, since a smaller space is better suited for her future needs, especially given her disease. By relocating and downsizing, she would lower, as I mentioned, her expenses, especially anything compared to California. And this freed up some additional assets. In addition to that, you know, she would be in an area that if she needed to, she could sell the home and move into assisted care and use the proceeds from the home to pay for that assisted care, because she paid cash for the house, which was about $400,000. If she did down the road end up needing to go to assisted care, the plan was to sell the home, which she bought for $400,000 cash. So this was, once again, not relying on her kids, keeping herself independent, and also handling her medical needs. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.